Springfield's Talk 104.1. I am Nick Reed. It is Author of the Week time because it's Thursday. And ABC Books on North Glenstone, again, want to thank them so much. They have always been tremendous partners making these author interviews possible by sponsoring Author of the Week. And we actually have a return author. Same author, different book. We spoke with him last year on Drinking with the Saints, Michael Foley's Why We Kiss Under the Mistletoe, Christmas Traditions Explained. What made you decide to write it?
Well, you know, as a boy, like many others, I was fascinated by Christmas. I loved the season, and I was always intrigued by the symbols because they're not self-explanatory. Why do we deck the halls with boughs of holly and not boxwood? What's up with the Christmas tree, and why do we kiss under the mistletoe? So, as an adult, being a theologian by training, I was able to do a deep dive into these customs and get some answers.
Well, let's start with the mistletoe. I mean, where did that come from?
It's got a long history, but the short answer is the Druids. They were big fans of the mistletoe. They thought it was a magical plant because it was green in the dead of winter. It had berries. It never needed soil. It kind of grew in the air. And so they would make peace under the mistletoe. And then when Christianity came along, they added their signature greeting of peace, which is the holy kiss.
Does the Christmas tree have similar origins?
So a lot of people think that the Christmas tree had a pagan origin. But I discovered there are actually myths about Christmas myths, and one of them is about the Christmas tree. As it turns out, the Christmas tree is a uniquely Christian invention.
How was it that Christians decided, oh, let's decorate a tree?
It started out as a stage play. December 24th was the unofficial feast of Adam and Eve, and they would enact plays about the Garden of Eden, and they had two trees on the stage. One was the Tree of Life, which was decorated with candy to symbolize eternal life. The other was the Tree of the Knowledge of Good and Evil, which they would decorate with apples or symbols of apples, such as red balls. And when these plays were eventually suppressed, people loved those trees so much that they combined them into one tree and moved them into their homes. And that's where we got the Christmas tree.
So why is it that we don't know that? I had always heard the myth that it was something that came from the Druids. Where did we get off track with that history?
Well, it's kind of understandable because the Germans did have a Yule tree, and they liked to decorate the interiors of their homes with evergreens, just to sort of ward off the doldrums of winter. But the paradise tree or the Christmas tree really did have a different origin. And one proof of this is that even into the 19th century, German households would have a Yule tree, which they'd keep up for all winter. And then on December 24th, they would put up the Christmas tree.
Oh, that is very interesting. 12 Days of Christmas. I want to ask you about this. I was just having a conversation with my family about this. I don't know where we were, but that song came on, and I noted that is my least favorite Christmas song, maybe even song, because the repetitive nature of it. I don't like repetitiveness within certain contexts, and so it just drives me nuts. But it is one of the most well-known Christmas songs, although most people probably could not tell you what each one of the days is in the song. But what is the 12 Days of Christmas? Where did that come from?
So the song was being inspired by a very old custom, which is observing the 12 days of Christmas, which are the period of time between December 25th, Christmas Day, and the Feast of the Epiphany, January 6th, with an unbroken period of merriment. The old-fashioned Christmas was very different from the modern one. You know, today, We seem to start Christmas earlier and earlier with our, you know, marketing season. You know, this year I saw jack-o'-lanterns and Christmas trees side by side for sale. So we start early, and then, you know, our airwaves are saturated with Christmas songs, and by the time we get to December 25th, we're practically sick of Christmas. The older model was that December was a time of restraint. It was Advent, and it was still a joyful time, but you held back. And then when Christmas came, you pulled out all the stops, and then for 12 days, you just made merry.
We're talking with our author of the week, Michael Foley, the book Why We Kiss Under the Mistletoe, Christmas Traditions Explained. Tell us about Santa Claus, Saint Nick, the origins there.
Well, Saint Nick was a real person, a very holy bishop, a great patron of children. He was a champion of the little guy. He protected people from unjust accusations. He protected his town from an onerous imperial tax. And then after his death, legends about him grew and grew and grew all throughout the Middle Ages. But the big transformation into Santa Claus took place in New York City at the beginning of the 19th century, when American authors basically took these old Dutch customs about St. Nicholas, and they added elements from Norse mythology, particularly regarding Thor and Woden, who, you know, had sleighs in the sky pulled by goats, and this is what made thunder. They took all these legends, they put them in a blender, and they turned on the switch. And that's where we got Santa Claus.
Yeah, you talk about what some would see as you reference a little darker. I love Christmas. I'm very traditional in the sense of the origins of it, but at the same time, the more secular aspects of it, I definitely enjoy. And then at the same time, I enjoy some of the different cultures and their versions of not just Santa Claus, but some of the darker side, Krampus, for example. It's, in fact, for me, my wife, our tradition, she always watches White Christmas as I put the lights on the tree. And then at some point between then and Christmas, when everyone is asleep, I watch Krampus, the movie. Because I find it really interesting. Tell us about some of the darker sides of Christmas, if you will, and the Krampus characters.
That was the big surprise for me, and I dedicate an entire chapter to the dark side of Christmas. Krampus was a demon in Austria, and he often is associated with Saint Nicholas as a kind of spooky sidekick, while St. Nicholas, who's very kind-hearted, gives gifts to the children, the nice children. Krampus is around to scare the naughty children. And there are dozens of these kind of spooky figures in European folklore.
I want to talk about you got the traditional aspect of Christmas, and then you've got the secular and everything in between. Christmas is an interesting holiday in that I don't know that there are any other holidays that are based in a specific religion that is so widely recognized and celebrated by people, even if they don't even necessarily know the meaning of it. That wide range there, I mean, clearly there are mass differences between the secular observance and the Christian observance, and then there are some that don't want the secular observance at all. In fact, they kind of push back at the idea of even taking kids to see Santa Claus because it detaches from the true meaning of it. How do you view all of that in that wide spectrum?
Oh, it is so wide, and it's fascinating. I met a friend who travels extensively, and he went to a home in Kazakhstan of a Muslim family, and they had a Christmas tree. And he asked why, and they just said, well, we just thought it was really nice. It's just a pretty custom. So they, you know, attach no religious meaning to it, but you're right. There's something so appealing about Christmas joy. And of course, it gets secularized, and it is easy to lose the religious meaning. But I tend to be optimistic. I think there are certain elements of a modern Christmas that are good, and you don't need to throw the baby out with the bathwater. One of the advantages of the modern Christmas is that it is more family-friendly than the medieval version. I told you before, the medievals loved those 12 days of Christmas, but for them, Christmas was actually more of a time of adult mischief than childhood innocence.
The coming together at Christmas and the gatherings, food is synonymous with it. And I think at times we just assume, well, when you get together, you have get-togethers, people bring food. But is there, beyond that, is there some other reason, motivation, or meaning behind the fact that, you know, the cookies and the breads and all of those sorts of treats?
There are just so many different Christmas foods and drinks and treats. I think the emphasis on food is a way of sort of driving out the darkness and the cold of winter. That coziness that comes from feasting together is, I think it has an extra psychological meaning when it's taking place in the middle of winter. And winter is a time of food scarcity. And you're warring against that with this Christmas cheer.
Before I have one final question, I do want you to tell us a bit about the Christmas cat. This is one of the characters, if you will, in the book. And it was one I was not aware of regarding Christmas, but I found it particularly humorous.
So some of the weirdest customs I discovered were in Iceland. They've got their whole thing, a whole different thing going on. They've got gnomes that visit you during the 12 days of Christmas, but they have this thing called the Christmas cat, and it's a man-eating cat, and it will eat you if you're not wearing new clothes for Christmas.
And why is that?
So there are three reasons they speculate behind this legend. One is, in the old days, it was the women folk who made all the clothes. So this was to incentivize them to, you know, do their job without complaint. The second reason was similar for children. When they get socks for Christmas, don't complain. This keeps you from being eaten. And then the third reason was to remind you to be kind to the poor. Give them clothes for the bitter, dark winter, because if you don't, they may end up as catnip.
So you write about all these different traditions across the world, not just the world, but even here in the United States, there are certain areas. I know I lived up in Wisconsin for a period of time, and up there was a St. Nick's Day, which was separate from Christmas, where you put wooden shoes out. And while, you know, where here in the Ozarks, where I was born and raised, I'd never even heard of that before. So you don't just have different traditions across the world, but even here within our own borders. And because there's that combined with advertising and Christmas specials, you have to be, I think, proactive in order to continue to recognize the true spirit and meaning of Christmas. And it is a Christian holiday. What can Christians do in order to really keep tethered to that, or to recapture that true spirit of Christmas?
Well, I think observing Christian customs faithfully throughout the year is a good way to do that. Christian symbols during the month of December, like the Advent calendar or the Advent wreath, observing St. Nicholas Day on December 6th, little things like that can anchor a family and keep them from just thinking of it in secular terms.
Our author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone, just south of Kearney. It is Michael P. Foley, Why We Kiss Under the Mistletoe, Christmas Traditions Explained. Thank you, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed.